Mrs. Hammond, Chair.
Honourable Hammond.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, everyone on the platform.
Good morning. Welcome.
Mr. Mbuyani, Chairperson.
Honourable Mbuyani.
Chairperson, good morning. And good morning, morning. To colleagues. Thank you.
Good morning.
Chair, Ms. Mwatse, Chair.
Honourable Mwatse.
Good morning, Chair, and good morning, colleagues. Thank you.
Good morning, morning.
Chair, Ms. Yaku.
Honourable Yaku.
Morning, Chair, morning, everybody. I hope you have a good meeting today.
Morning, 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 welcome.
Chair, Mr. Mulder, Chair.
Honourable Mulder.
Good morning, Chair, good morning, colleagues.
Morning, 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 Mr. Mulder.
Chair, Mr. Cuthbert, Chair.
Honourable Cuthbert.
Good morning, Chairperson.
Good morning. Morning. Welcome.
Chairperson, Mr. Thring, Chair.
Honourable Thring.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, colleagues.
Good morning. Welcome, Honourable Thring.
Chair, Ms. Mutahung, Chair.
Honourable Mutahung.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, colleagues.
Good morning. Welcome.
Chair, we'll deal with apologies as part of the agenda items, Chair.
Yes, definitely. Okay, thank you very much. I'm sure that actually assists us to be able to proceed with the meeting. Can we actually fly the agenda of the meeting? It's going slow.
Let me see, Chair. I can see.
Okay. Now I can see it. I'm sure all the members can be able to see the agenda. I think at this stage, we would actually have to check Secretariat.
Chair, with apologies, Chair.
Apologies.
Mr. McPherson has indicated that he will join the meeting late, Chair. As well as Mr. Burson Namasis having challenges linking onto the platform, Chair. So those are the two apologies at this moment, Chair. All other members are on the platform, Chair.
Okay. Thank you very much. We will just look at the item following adoption of the agenda. We do actually see that we're going to speak to the status of the remitted bills. And we do have the briefing by the National Credit Regulator on their strategic and annual performance plans for 2021-22. And we will be concluding our meeting after questions and answer session. Honourable members, I think if we can actually get you to indicate...
Can you raise the hand?
Honourable Hammond.
Thank you, Chair. I move for the adoption of the agenda as tabled.
Thank you very much. Honourable Mbuyani.
Chairperson, thank you very much. I second the proposal. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Let's check. I'm sure there's no objection. If none, can we then actually proceed to the item on the agenda in terms of the remitted bills, Secretariat, because we do actually have a process that we will need to engage on. And at this stage, yes.
Yes, Chair, for you just inform the committee of your decision in terms of the rules, Chair, regarding the remitted bills. So you just have to inform the committee on that.
Oh, okay. No, because we did speak about it the last time, you remember, but we didn't actually get to the point where we actually have to have a conclusive process moving forward. I'm sure you can speak to that later. The committee did receive... Secretariat?
No, Chair, you are proceeding correctly, Chair, in terms of what you started, Chair.
Okay, okay. The committee did receive from the National Assembly table requesting that its report with regards to the remitted bills be split into two separate reports to to ensure compliance with the Joint Rule 204, which assumes that such a report should be per bill as referred to with respect to the President's reservation. The committee advised that there would be no need to change the content substance, but they simply be separated in informing as it relates to each bill. In the light of the request of the National Assembly table, I took the necessary action as chairperson in terms of National Assembly Rule 1582B in order to comply with the advice received. In terms of National Assembly 1583, I must report to the committee of on taken in terms of rules 1582B. Therefore, in terms of the National Assembly rules 1583, I am informing the committee that I have requested that the Secretariat split the reports of the remitted bills dated 14th May 2021 into two separate reports, as the content was merely allocated to the relevant reports on each and on the substance of the changes we made. It did not require any decision from the committee. These reports were subsequently published at the ATC dated 19 May 2021. So I think we can actually then say the committee has been informed of the work done, which doesn't materially change the detail of the communication with the National Assembly. Information that has actually gone out earlier on the 12th and later on the 14th, and it's actually on the record of the Parliament. So the remitted bills have been submitted on the discussions and requests that we have actually requested as a committee, and I think maybe we can actually also speak a bit to a point of what will be processed moving forward, Secretariat, before we can actually ask members, because this is procedural, no changes of the detail, and then we can pick it up from there.
Chair, you've correctly captured the request. Like you indicated, we received the request from the National Assembly table to split the bills, and in terms of the rules which you indicated, you are allowed to do so. But if you take any decisions on matters, you are required to report to the committee, which you've just done in terms of the rule. Chair, the matter is on the ATC, as on the order paper, as two separate reports, Chair. So it's a matter now for the program committee to schedule these two reports for consideration by the House. But in terms of the rules, you have complied with the rules, and you've informed the committee of your action, of the action taken on the matter. And because, as you indicated, materially nothing has changed, so it didn't require a decision of the committee. So you were in your rights to act on behalf of the committee, and the rules require you to report on the matter, which you just did now, Chair. So the matter is now on the order paper, and we could proceed with the meeting, Chair.
Okay. Let me just check with the members, because I think that they're in the circulated documents of the 14th of May and 19th of May. The information was actually circulated, but I thought it will be important if there are any clarity-seeking questions or
Chair,
comments from members.
Mrs. Hammond, raise the hand, Chair.
Oh, Honourable Hammond.
Thank you very much for that report, Chair. As you say, you did mention it previously, but you are just doing the procedural requirements in terms of informing the committee, and we take note of your report, and we can proceed.
Okay.
Because we've seen the documents ATC, as you have indicated. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Hammond. I'm sure there's agreement with the other members of the committee that we can proceed. So as an agenda item, I thought let's actually speak to that. Thank you, Honorable Hammonds. Are there any other comments? The item is agreed to. Then I will actually ask that we proceed to the next item on the agenda in terms of the National Credit Regulator. The purpose of today's meeting is to receive the briefing of the NCR to outline the intended plans and or intervention being implemented for the 2021-22 financial year. The committee has an opportunity to interrogate whether these plans and or interventions to ensure that they will be national priority and the NCR's mandate, as well as whether the planned use of resources in the alignment of this, also whether the activity will achieve the intended outcomes. So we will actually be receiving the NCR teams. We did actually have the connection of CEO Motsihare. We do actually have on the list, which I have, that we have Ms. Josephine Mayer, CFO. We do have Mr. Mashapa, who's company secretary. And we actually do have Mr. Tsopo, who will actually be joining the team. We do actually have our DTIC, DDG, I think DDC Masoja. And we do actually see, have our COO as well, Madomela. So, Secretary, I'm sure everyone is connected. You allow me.
Everyone is connected. It's over to the NCR chair.
Okay. Let me just check with the DDG first before NCR, if ever there's any comment. DDG Masoja.
Morning, Chair, and morning, Honourable Members. Chair, we are here with the NCR as one of our entities responsible for credit matters and the National Credit Act. We welcome them for this meeting. There are no issues from our side, Chair. And also to acknowledge the Acting COO, Mr. Nontombi Matomela. Thank you.
Okay. Let's actually then allow our CEO to have the presentation flighted. She did it earlier, and it went on okay. And then let's invite him, Mayor Motsihare.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members. I'd also like to say good morning to the DDG and the group COO for the DTIC. With me, as the Honourable Chairperson has indicated, is the Deputy Chief Executive Officer Advocate Obed Domane, the CFO, Ms. Josephine Mayer, and the Company Secretary, who also heads Investigation Enforcement, Mr. Lisiba Mashap. We will be presenting to you the NCR strategic and annual performance plans. Can you go to the next slide, please? Prudence? Yeah, this is the next slide, thank you. These are the areas that I'm going to be covering in my presentation: the vision and mission, the legislative mandate of the NCR, the five-year strategic plan, the NCR's annual performance plan, the budget summary, credit trends during the COVID-19 period, debt relief measures during the COVID-19 period, and then I will conclude. Next slide, please. The vision of the NCR is to promote a South African consumer credit market that is fair, transparent, accessible, and dynamic. And the mission is to support the social and economic advancement of South Africa by regulating for a fair and non-discriminatory market for access to consumer credit and promoting responsible credit granting, use and effective redress. Next slide, please. In terms of our legislative mandate, I just wanted to remind honorable members is that the NCR is here to promote a fair and non-discriminatory marketplace for access to consumer credit, to provide for general regulation of consumer credit and improve standards of consumer information, and to prohibit certain unfair credit and credit market practices, to promote responsible credit granting and use to and credit granting and use to prohibit reckless credit granting, and to provide for debt reorganization in cases of over-indebtedness, to regulate credit information, and to promote a consistent enforcement framework relating to consumer credit. Next slide, please. Now, this is the current landscape, and I'm just giving honorable members an idea of the entities that we regulate as the National Credit Regulator. We regulate credit providers. This includes your banks, retailers that provide credit, insurance companies that lend money against policies, small micro lenders, pawn brokers, and so forth. We've registered to date about 8,329 credit providers with 36,000 branches. We've registered 7 alternative dispute resolution agents, 44 credit bureaus, 1,722 debt counselors. Now, debt counselors are individuals that are registered and regulated by the NC. They assist over-indebted borrowers. And they are able to negotiate terms with credit providers to enable consumers to comfortably service their loans with credit providers. And then we have 4 payment distribution agents, and these are companies that collect money from over-indebted consumers and distribute this to credit providers. Next slide, please. I thought it might be worthwhile to also just give you an indication of the size of the credit industry in South Africa. As at end of December 2020, we were sitting at 2 trillion rands, and the total credit granted was 104 billion. Now, as you can see from, you know, the graph that is depicted there, the blue line chart represents gross debtors book. We see a small increase from quarter two, which is from 2019 quarter two. We see a slight increase, and this is as a result of the fact that people, especially during the hard lockdown, were not paying because, you know, some of them had lost jobs, others had reduced revenue, you know, incomes, but there were also payment holidays that were offered, especially if you look at quarter two, payment holidays that were offered to consumers, and therefore there were no payments that were coming in. Next slide, please. This is just to give you a picture of some of the information that we publish on a quarterly basis. It's information that we receive from registered credit providers and registered credit bureaus, and it gives us an indication of the level of indebtedness of consumers in the country, but also the, you know, it also gives us an idea of the different types of credit that are extended to consumers, and we publish this information on a quarterly basis. Next slide, please. These are some of the information brochures that are given to consumers, and we have these in all 11 official languages. There's a lot other vehicles that we use in reaching out to consumers in the country. Next slide, please. Now, in terms of a 5-year strategic plan, we've got 2 impact statements. The first impact statement and talks to improve regulatory environment, which promotes economic growth through job creation, integration, and transformation. And the second impact statement talks to a fair, responsible, and accessible consumer credit market, which we need to promote. and this talks directly to the our preamble. Now, in terms of the impact statement one, the outcome is that we need to make sure that there's improved consumer protection through education and awareness of the NCA. Now, this is one of the key functions of the National Credit Regulator. We anticipate that by the fifth year, we will have conducted 3,400 consumer education and awareness campaigns. And this would be around consumer rights in general, but specifically in terms of deceptive and unfair practices, we will have conducted 650 consumer education and awareness campaigns. We anticipate that by the fifth year, we'll be able to register 99% of registrants that would have submitted applications to the NCR within 2 business days. So we want to continue to work on reducing our turnaround times in terms of applications for registration to allow entities to open their businesses quicker and be able to create jobs in the process. Next slide, please. Now, in terms of the impact statement two, which talks to a fair, responsible, and accessible consumer credit market, we need to have improved compliance through enforcement of the National Credit Act. We anticipate that by the fifth year, we will have conducted 2,000 investigations on credit providers for compliance with regulations pertaining to the total cost of credit, including credit life insurance. And we hope that we will have conducted 1,500 by the fifth year investigations on credit providers for compliance with the regulations pertaining to reckless lending. We will have conducted 70 investigations in the fifth year in terms of the number of credit bureaus for compliance with the National Credit Act. Next slide, please. Now, this is the NCR's annual performance plan, and these are our targets for the next 3 years. In this year, we will conduct 500 consumer education campaigns on consumer rights in general, 520 in the next year, and 540 the year following that. And the campaigns on deceptive and unfair practices, 120 this year, increasing to 130 in the following year and 140 in the third year. Next slide, please. And in terms of improving efficiency in the registration process of persons and entities, it will be 97% within 9 days this year. But what we've done is that we've also increased the percentage to register, which is 98%, and reduced the number of days to register, which will be 8 in the next year. And continue to reduce the number of business days to register in 2023-2024. Next slide, please. In terms of this program, which talks to enforcement of the National Credit Act and to facilitate improved compliance through enforcement of the National Credit Act, is that we will be conducting 420 investigations this year, increasing that to 450 and then 500 in the third year. And in terms of enforcement action to be taken, we'll take enforcement action in instances where we identify contraventions in our investigations. So it will be 80% this year, 80% in the following year, and 85% in the third year. Next, please. We will, in this financial year, be conducting an impact study on limitations on credit and on fees and interest rates and credit life regulations, and submit a final report by the end of the financial year to the DTIC. Now, this study is required to be conducted in terms of the Act every 3 years. That's why, you know, nothing appears in the next 2 years. Next slide, please. We hope to conduct, we will be conducting 308 investigations on credit providers, and these investigations will relate to reckless lending and or collection of prescribed debt
on credit providers. So it's 380 this year, 430 next year, 450 in the third year. And we will take 70%, we'll take enforcement action on 70% of contraventions that are identified during those investigations in this year, 75% in the second year, and 80% in the third year. Next slide, please. And in terms of compliance by hosting credit bureaus, we will be looking at the quality, accuracy, data security or protection, and the removal of paid-up judgments and adverse consumer credit information when we conduct investigations on these credit bureaus. Now, hosting credit bureaus hold a full database of all credit-active consumers in South Africa. You also have other types of credit bureaus that we consider to be, that are classified as resellers, and they retain information on, you know, they are allowed to retain information for 72 hours, whereas these big ones are allowed to retain information for a longer period of time. So these credit bureaus are the ones that would need extensive IT systems and infrastructure, as millions of records flow through, you know, their processes. So we have to date registered about 7. We will be conducting 3 investigations in this year on these credit bureaus. We anticipate to conduct investigations on 4 of them in the next year, and then 5 in the third year. And we will take enforcement action on 75% of the contraventions that would have been identified during the investigations. 75 again next year, and 80% in the third year. Next slide, please. Right, and in terms of improving compliance again, you know, through enforcement of the Act, here we will look at all the registered credit bureaus, and we will make sure that each year, and this is something that we've been doing each year, we will evaluate 100% annual compliance reports certified by independent auditors. They are required to make sure that, you know, each year their auditors submit information to the NCR within 6 months of their financial year end. And what we will do is that where we are identify contraventions, or where contraventions are reported by the independent auditors, we will take enforcement action on 70% of, you know, 70% on non-compliant credit bureaus, 17 the next year and 17 the third year. Next slide, please. What we've also done is that we have linked the work that we do as the NCR to the DTIC Joint Key Performance Indicators. There are 7 joint key indicators that we've linked our work to, and we will take you through each one of them. Can we go to the next slide for the joint indicator one, which talks to integrated support to drive industrialization? What we are saying as the NCR is that we will implement 60% of the procurement plan, excluding ICT procurement, and we've excluded ICT procurement because most of the ICT equipment and software we get, you know, overseas. So if you are looking at procurement locally, we will make sure that 60% goes to South African companies. And in terms of the joint indicator 2, which talks to the Africa continent free trade area, is that we are looking to sign a memorandum of understanding with one regulator in one SADC country for regulatory information sharing and capacity building. We have relationships already with regulators, you know, especially in the region, in the SADC region. We've had inquiries from Eswatini regulator. We have we've had, you know, instances where NAMFISA, which is a regulator in Namibia, have also indicated interest in entering into an MOU with the national credit regulator. We've had inquiries from Lesotho. We've had inquiries from Zambia, even other African countries outside of the SADC region. So this is something that it is possible to do. And we will share information, especially around areas of consumer education, you know, and so forth. And I'm sure there's something, some other things that we can also learn as the NCR from those countries. Next slide, please. Now, in terms of investment facilitation and growth, we are looking to conduct two workshops on developmental credit. And developmental credit includes credit extended for education purposes, credit towards small businesses, credit towards low-cost housing, because we and we also want to do a research to look at any regulatory impediments that might be there that are discouraging credit providers to go into the sector. So this is one research that we will be conducting this year. And for the district development and special equity, and excuse me for using acronyms, we will participate and consider applications in the IFWG, which is the Intergovernmental FinTech Working Group. And this is a collaborative effort among several South African financial sector regulators, including the Financial Intelligence Center, the NCR, the FSCA, which is the Financial Sector Conduct Authority, the South African Reserve Bank, and the South African Revenue Services. They have created an innovation hub, the purpose of which is to demystify the regulatory landscape by providing a space for safe testing of innovative ideas and actively advance innovation in financial services. So NCR is part of this forum, and we already have an interest in one of the entities that want to test ideas that fall within our mandate. We will be processing that application for registration. They want to register as a niche credit bureau. So we will continue to report on that on a quarterly basis to the DTIC. Next slide, please. Now, actions to promote transformation. We are looking to ensure that our 40% of our procurement spend will be spent on majority women-owned companies. And we will also conduct 4 training sessions on the National Credit Act to these women-owned companies. So we will not limit it just to law firms, but other service providers outside, you know, the law field. And the green, in terms of the green economy and greening the economy, we will be recycling used working paper. And for us to be able to prove, especially to the auditors, that this is happening, is that we're producers. There is a certificate that can be produced to confirm that. Next slide, please. As I indicated earlier, we are looking to register 97% of persons. It may be credit providers, debt counselors, or credit bureaus. And within, we want to register them within 9 business days in this particular year. Thank you, Chair. I think at this stage I will hand over to the CFO, Ms. Mayor.
CFO, thank you, CEO.
Good morning, Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members. My first slide is a high-level summary of the budget. In terms of the, I would just like to draw the committee's attention to the 2020-21 preliminary figures. That is the year we just closed in March 2021. It's preliminary because the figures are still subject to audit. We have a total budget of 157 million, but this represents a adjusted budget because we had to surrender 12 million rand to the National Treasury during the year that we just ended. What we intend to do going forward in the 21-22 to 23-24 is really to look at our ICT system. As NCR, we have a number of legacy systems, and we would want to build new systems in order to create efficiency in the process and make access to our registrants more easier and for them to access our services more easier. Next slide. The next slide summarizes our budget in three categories. The first category being the grant that we get from the DTIC. We also charge our registrants a fee for being able to grant credit. There's certain requirements in terms of a registration process that we follow, due diligence and so forth, and that we charge a fee for. Chair should also note that we have not increased the fees for registrants. There was a fee increase due last year, but we held it back because of the pandemic and what it did to the effect it had on the economy. Second fees from registrants line item is also a bit volatile because credit providers are closing down. And what we've actually done is we've kept the fee consistent throughout the MDF period. The last line item that speaks to other income, this is the recovery for costs that we incurred on investigation and consumer education activities. So you'll find a corresponding expense line item, and then we recover it and record it as other income. Next slide, please. The next slide summarizes our expenditure into the expenditure categories of compensation of employees, goods and services, and capital expenditure. Chair will note that compensation over the MDF period ranges about 55% of our total budget. As indicated earlier, because of legacy systems, most of our processes are manual. So we employ people to do the job, but once we automate some of them, it does not reduce the employee cost, but we can use the employees more for monitoring compliance, which is a process we can never automate. So, for example, registration we can automate and things like that. So compensation represents 45% of the total budget. It's a ratio that we continuously monitor because we do not want to exceed that 55% and become too much human capital intensive. We also have a call center, which is the consumer's access point to NCR. So if a consumer wants to complain or lodge a complaint about a credit provider or credit agreement or a debt counselor, you need to have a warm body on the other side to receive the person's complaint, and then it gets taken through the necessary checks and investigations. Goods and services, it increased from last year to this year because we will be conducting some research, additional research topics relating to unsecured loans, which CEO has mentioned in her presentation just a few minutes ago, as well as the impact of COVID on the credit industry. And then your capital expenditure, which we have actually reduced because I think in the 2021 financial year, the year we just finished, was a pandemic and enabling a remote working environment. We had to spend a bit on capital expenditure, making sure that employees have laptops and other tools of trade to enable them to work remotely. Thank you, Chair. CEO.
Thank you, CFO. I will continue with the presentation, Honorable Chair. Next slide, please. Now, I'm going to take you through the credit trends during COVID-19 and the following are the statistical credit trends that we picked up. This is the percentage distribution of disbursement per credit type. The different colors represent, you know, the different credit products that are offered by credit providers. And you can see that there was a dip, for instance, in quarter two, and this was during level four, the hard down, the hard lockdown, sorry. This is when the DIS office was closed. Those are mortgages, so we couldn't, banks, for instance, couldn't get bonds registered during that period. And a lot of credit providers were not operating also during that period, especially the small micro lenders, the retailers, you know, and you know, other small non-bank credit providers. But we see the mortgage line graph going up, and this is as a result of the fact that the economy was opening up, and people were, you know, some consumers were taking advantage of the fact that the interest rates had come down. And I'll show you later, you know, what the current prevailing interest rates are. But we see some of the, you know, the rest of the other credit products, you know, coming down, especially because, you know, there's been a lockdown. We are now in level one, and credit providers are very cautious in extending credit to consumers still. Continue, please. And in terms of the current credit landscape, we are now looking at the performance of these loans that were given to consumers. Consumers with impaired records increased slightly in December 2020, the majority of which are 3 or more months in arrears. You see we are sitting at 40% as at end of December 2020. The line graph started dipping in quarter one, which is quarter one 2020. And that was the beginning of the hard lockdown when payment, you know, holidays were being offered to consumers. That line, brown line graph would have gone up if it was not for the fact that there were debt relief measures that were offered to consumers. So that has kept the line, you know, hovering around 40%, even up to the end of December. Please continue. Now, in terms of applications received and rejected, we see that there's been, you know, a number of applications that were received by credit providers. However, you know, the rejection rate has been coming down, especially, you know, from quarter one 2020. The applications also came down in quarter two 2020. And obviously, during that period, as I indicated, quarter two is between April, May, June. Yeah, that's when we had a hard lockdown, and therefore, you know, there was no credit that was extended. Not much, anyway. It's only the banks that were operating during that period. Next slide, please. We see the rejection rates going up from, you know, quarter one, 61%, going up to 67% in quarter two, 2020, and slightly coming down to 64% in quarter three, 2020. And again, this is a situation where you had, you know, a lot of applications coming through but were rejected because you also had a lot of consumers who were desperate to get credit, you know, just to get by. And unfortunately, the banks were, you know, reluctant to give out too much credit because they needed to make sure that they comply with affordability assessments. Next slide, please. Now, these are the applicable interest rate caps pre-national lockdown and during the national lockdown. With effect from the 19th of March 2020, the prevailing interest rate at the time were, as you see there, mortgages were going at 18.25% per annum, and interest rates are linked to the repo rate. So every time the Reserve Bank changes the repo rate, it affects the interest rates that, or at least the caps that, you know, credit providers can charge up to. We see mortgage agreements, the interest rate, for instance, for the Fed for the 25th of March 2021, those interest rates had come down to 15.5. And in terms of credit facilities which are overdraft facilities, credit cards, it was 20% pre-national lockdown. The interest rates are now down to 17.5. Unsecured credit was sitting at 27.25% pre-national lockdown, and it has now come down to 24.5%. developmental credit has also come down from 33% to 30%, and the short-term transactions, these are short-term loans, and these are loans up to 8,000 rands payable over a period of 36 months, payable over a period of 6 months. What happens is that we are saying that if you get your first loan, the credit provider can charge you 5% for that loan. But if they offer you another loan in the same year, then they have to reduce the interest rate to 3%. So that remained. Other credit agreements include loans that go towards vehicle finance. The interest rates were at 23.25, and that was reduced to 20%. And incidental credit agreements remained at 2%. And incidental credit agreements are agreements, for instance, if I give you an example of an audit firm that would charge you a certain amount of money for doing work, you would then pay them within 30 days. And if you don't pay whatever it is that you owe in those 30 days, they can only charge you up to 2% per month after that as an additional fee. So it falls under the Act once you default, and they charge a fee for that. Next slide, please. These are the debt relief measures that were introduced during COVID-19 period. The payment holidays, that were between 3 to 6 months. Claims from credit life insurance for those consumers who were retrenched. Restructuring of debt and reduction of installments. This will also happen, in instances where you are able to approach credit providers and they are able to then reduce your installments, but they increase the repayment period. Other consumers took advantage of the emergency loans that were offered by credit providers. And debt review consumers who were adversely impacted were given an opportunity to apply for a change in circumstances. So in an instance where, because you are under debt review, an installment has to be reduced because you are under debt review, you were able to go back and still get that installment reduced further because of the fact that you were now getting reduced income. Next slide, please. Now, the impact on the debt counseling industry. As I indicated, debt counselors are individuals that are regulated by the NCR and they assist over-indebted consumers. We did a study that covered 200 debt counselors. 70% of these debt counselors experienced 33% or less of their consumers becoming unemployed. So about 33% of the consumers that were under debt review were unemployed. 34% or more of these consumers were experiencing temporary loss of income. And in terms of 84% of these 200 debt counselors that we surveyed, they indicated that the consumers that they were assisting were experiencing a change in circumstances. Some were losing jobs. Others were getting reduced income. And then 47% of the debt counselors indicated that their consumers or the clients that they were servicing utilized credit life insurance. So they were able to claim from credit life insurance. And 48% of these debt counselors indicated that, they were receiving inquiries on emergency loans from consumers. Next slide, please. Now, in conclusion, honorable members, we know that COVID-19 is here to stay with us for a while. The vaccinations have started, but it will take a while before, anything to get back to normal. The COVID-19 pandemic has, without a doubt, resulted in an adverse financial impact on the already over-indebted and overburdened consumers as a result of temporary or permanent loss of income, causing increased debt repayment defaults and terminations. And this impact will be felt by many over a long period of time still to come. The noted decrease of the number of consumers applying for debt counseling could be as a result of lack of income to enable a debt counselor to negotiate terms, for reduced installments with credit providers, because remember, as a consumer, you can only go under debt review if you are over indebted and if you are receiving some income, because it is that income that the debt canceller needs to be able to restructure and negotiate with credit providers on your behalf. I thank you.
Thank you very much, CEO. I'm sure we can actually then go back to the members and actually ask that we get the questions and comments session, which we have on our agenda as the next point. But thanks for the presentation. Honorable members, may I invite you to actually comment on the presentation that we have received from the CEO and actually get you to be able to pick up on issues where we want to actually get more clarity and comments. Honorable members, Secretary, if you can assist to see who are the members who would like to make comments.
Chairperson,
yes.
We have Mr. Thring and Ms. Yaku at the moment, Chair.
Okay. Honorable Thring and Honorable Yaku, in that order. Honorable Thring.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you also for the excellent presentation. Chair, essentially I've got about three questions. The first is with regards to slide 15 and slide 17. Both slides, 15 and 17, speaks to the enforcement issue with regards to the National Credit Act to promote fair, responsible, accessible consumer credit. So the enforcement, the target for enforcement is 80% of action on 80% of investigations identified for non-compliance. Slide 17, the action annual target there is action on enforcement action on 70% of the investigations. So so that leaves 20% of where you've investigated and found that there's actually cause for action to take place. But there's 20% where you are not able to enforce the laws, and in the other case, if it's a 70% of investigations, then you have a 30% that are kind of getting away with illegal activity. So how do you reconcile that? And it may be an aspect of resources and a lack of resources. But surely we should be looking at where investigations have been conducted and it has been found those that have actually been non-compliant in terms of the law, that we should actually have a 100% enforcement with regards to the law. And then I think my second question just has to be with regards to what is the number of, if any, if you have those particular statistics, of non-compliance where it comes to perhaps foreigners who are here in the country illegally and taking advantage also of the needs of our ordinary citizens. So foreigners who are actually lending finances or acting as loan sharks, are there any figures with regards to the involvement of foreigners within the country? And then my third question would be with regards to within the news, we've actually seen allegations that have been leveled against the banks for treating certain sections of our population unfairly. The allegation is that there's unfair treatment of certain sectors of our population. And I know that it may not necessarily have to do with the NCR, but this could be the banking ombudsman. But is there a relationship also with the banking ombudsman then, if not with the NCR, with regards to interrogating those allegations and finding whether there's any truth in it? Thank you, Chair.
Can I ask Honorable Yako, to the CEO, we will take the questions and comments from members, and then we allow you, CEO, to then allocate to your members and comment as well. Honorable Yako.
Thank you so much, Chairperson. If with your permission, I don't put my video on. I'm not sure because I'm using Rain, and you know how sometimes it just goes in and out. Thank you so much for the presentation from the NCR. I'm just concerned about sort of it seems like they were just ticking the boxes on some of the issues and some of the targets that they put on this performance plan. For instance, I'm going to just highlight what mostly bothered me, which was slide 23, where it talks about actions to promote transformation. And they say that their annual target is 40% of procurement spent on majority women-owned companies. And for me, it doesn't make sense why that would be 40%. And also the conduct 4 training sessions to women-owned law firms. There's so many women-owned law firms, budding ones, new ones, women who have been in the law business for a while, trying to push strides. So for me, it doesn't make sense why we would focus on 4 training sessions to women-owned law firms. Just the same in line with joint indicator number 6, the green economy and greening the economy, to say that your annual target is a certificate produced on recycled used working paper. I don't know, it just seems to me like someone just threw that out there. I don't think anybody really, really thought about the people that they would be engaging or the green economy for that matter. So I'm just worried that this for me is disappointing to see a presentation that blatantly just doesn't touch on the actual issue it's supposed to touch on its performance plan. So I'm a bit concerned exactly what informed the NCR to say that their plan is to conduct 4 training sessions to women-owned law firms, and that their only greening plan is to have a certificate produced on recycled used working paper. Thank you, Chair.
Let's okay. Check, are there any other hands? Yes, Andre?
We have Mr. McPherson and Mr. Mbuyani, Chair.
Honorable McPherson and Honorable Mbuyani in that order.
Thanks very much. I hope I'm audible.
Very clear.
Thank you. So, CEO, I just want to say that I joined the presentation a little bit late, so I do apologize if I may be covering something that was traversed by you. But I think it's important to also understand what the proactive stance of the NCR has been during the COVID pandemic, and not just the reactive stance has been. And I want to give 2 instances where I think the NCR has fallen short. The first has been the larger scale COVID-19 loan guaranteed scheme, which was about 200 billion rand, which was then going to be administered through the banks. I see that I think about a week ago, Barsa released a report, an update on that, saying that about 56% of total applicants had been unsuccessful because they didn't meet eligible criteria for the scheme set out by Treasury, Reserve Bank, and banks' risk criteria. Now, in fact, we know that loan scheme has been poorly taken up, and there's a number of reasons for that. That simply that businesses aren't willing to take on more credit due to how terrible the economy is. But one of the main drivers have just been the inability of banks to grant loans due to the affordability assessments that are set out by the NCR. So what proactive stance has the NCR taken with banks in trying to look at affordability assessments and risk criteria that you guys set in trying to get more businesses to at least be able to meet the minimum threshold of that loan scheme? In April last year, the DA petitioned the minister to invoke Section 11.3 of the NCA to make credit more accessible to credit applicants, and as you know, that it makes it's referred to colloquially as public interest credit provision. And we have set out a number of very innovative and progressive positions on what that maximum permissible debt may be, what those credit agreements would be subject to in terms of a repayment term, what those interest rates would be, and most importantly, what the minimum criteria of affordability assessments would be under those specific public interest loans, which would make it easier for people to access credit as long as they could provide things like proof of financial distress, income interruption, existing financial obligations, dependent, and obviously debt repayment history per the Credit Bureau record. Now, that section has never been invoked before. We thought that it would be a good opportunity to do so, so it could put money in the hands of people that desperately needed it. It really is regrettable that the minister chose not even to engage us on that section. And completely dismissed altogether, which I think really harmed potentially millions of South Africans. But what, so I mean, that was something that came from myself as a member of Parliament. But what was the NCR putting to the minister, to banks? How were they looking at affordability assessment to take into account what was going on? Or were you just rigidly sort of saying, well, that's the rules and that's in which we apply? Because if that is the stance of the NCR, then I really do think that the NCR failed the country when people really needed access to finance and funding. And I would be interested in your take as to whether you thought that public interest credit agreements were a good idea. Because as much as your job is to regulate the compliance of credit, surely it should also be to proactively look to getting affordable credit to people who need it, to stop the loan shark business, which you know very well boomed during COVID and continues to boom. Because if people, and I have repeated this many times, and I have been proven right now by the Credit Amendment Bill, which was ill-fatedly agreed to by this committee in Parliament, that the biggest people that benefit the most out of ham-fisted credit policy is loan sharks. They are making billions and billions, and you have no ability to stop them. So I would just like your comments and thoughts about your performance proactively during the COVID pandemic. Thank you.
Honorable Mbuyane.
Chairperson, thank you very much. Let me first welcome the presentation. Very much informative, Chairperson. Maybe I would like to propose that the NCR get out of the office and go to our constituency offices in the rural slum of riparian areas, so that they are able to share the information that is very much key. Chairperson, one other issue, I think, let me just check challenges of those over-indebted and taken advantage of by some fly by national institution. What is the issue there? What is the result from the department, the entities, in terms of dealing with those challenges? And also, I wanted just to check difficulties on withdrawing from credit consultation. What is the process there, and how best can we deal with that matter? The understanding of who qualifies to be assisted in the debt relief, Chairperson, is very much important, because the most vulnerable and the qualifying masses are not aware of this information, and they are dealt with by these fly-by-night institutions of Mashonisas and the like. Maybe I will propose, Chairperson, that the next time we get the report in terms of the price manipulation during COVID-19 from the NRC, NCR, to check as to what happened with this manipulation of prices during the COVID-19. If you can get just two slides that can be able to check as to what happened during the process. Chairperson, before I submarine, I just want to check the enforcement of the National Credit Act, because we dealt with the Act and now need to be enforced. Where are we? How far are we? Are we winning? Or what are the challenges, Chairperson? Maybe I will pause. Let me just check the investigation on reckless lending. Turnaround time. I'll stop there for now, Chairperson. Thank you very much.
Let's check if there are any further comments or questions from members, Secretariat.
There's currently no hands raised, Chair.
Okay. Let's go back to the CEO and the team on the questions and comments that we have just received from members. CEO.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. The issue on 80% or 70% or 75% being taken, enforcement action taken on contraventions, the reason why we didn't put it at 100% for fear of saying, we didn't want to shoot ourselves in the foot, is that we don't want a situation where we identify a contravention in the last month of the financial year, and because of the timing issue, we are therefore not able to take enforcement action immediately, because there are a number of tools that we use in monitoring compliance with the National Credit Act. We rely on desktop compliance, on-site inspections. We rely on reports that we receive from auditors and so forth. And sometimes, depending on the contravention that we identify, it may require us to refer a matter to the tribunal, and that in itself, is a process, and that's why we did not put enforcement action at 100%. And I'm going to ask my team to raise hands in instances where, they can also assist with responses. And just to go to the other issue around the Honorable McPherson's concern around the fact that we did not invoke the provisions of Section 11, we were of the view that credit providers during that period could extend emergency loans to consumers affected by COVID-19 as per Section 1 of the NCA. And we believe that the extension of such credit is exempted from affordability assessments and reckless lending provisions in the same manner that Section 11 does. And therefore, we felt it was in our view that it was not necessary to invoke the provisions of Section 11 as it serves the same purpose as emergency loan provisions. It should only arise in different circumstances, which are much broader, in our view, than the rationale for emergency loans. So that was our view, you know, as the NCR. Can I ask perhaps Mr. Mashapa, who has the investigation enforcement area, to respond to some of those questions and concerns?
Okay. Dr. Mashapa, you have been requested. Floor is yours.
Thank you, CEO, and thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, honorable members. Yes, indeed, I will start with the last response that the CEO was giving around the steps that we have taken to assist consumers during COVID-19. We reiterate that the National Credit Act already makes provision for an emergency loan mechanism which caters for situations that have arisen during the COVID-19 pandemic, where consumers have unexpectedly lost their jobs and income. So the Act already empowers credit providers to give consumers emergency loans without applying the affordability assessment rules. So the mechanism is already there, it's available for usage, and in fact, we had one major bank, one of the big four, which engaged us on exactly this point, where they indicated to us that they want to provide an emergency loan scheme, and they kept us updated about the uptake of those loans. So that there is already a mechanism in the legislation to assist consumers in case emergencies arise, not only for COVID-19, but also for other cases of natural disasters that impact consumers and their immediate families. Regarding the loan guarantee scheme, as far as we know, the loans that were going to be issued under this scheme were guaranteed by the government, which means that if consumers were to eventually default on the loans, the government would bail out consumers. I think it would have been undesirable for the NCR, for example, to tell the banks to change their lending rules or relax their appetite for lending. I don't think it's our space to go that far. As long as the bank has its own credit policy and criteria and ensures that the loans are not going to over-indebt the businesses that qualified for those loans. And in fact, we have also seen in the media where the individual banks were saying that businesses were very cautious to take on more credit, and especially under the scheme, during a time when business activity was not that high. In other words, they had a higher risk of not being able to eventually repay the loans. So I don't believe that there was much that we could do regarding the loan guarantee scheme if there was just no appetite from businesses to take up more credit during a period of uncertainty and rising unemployment where their ability to repay the loan was uncertain. And I think Mr. McPherson did mention this, that he knows, he heard that the businesses were very, most businesses were reluctant to take on more credit during this period of the COVID-19 pandemic. Regarding the unfair treatment by banks of certain sections of the population, first of all, we want to say that the National Credit Act already outlaws unfair discrimination. It has a specific section on unfair discrimination, and secondly, it gives consumers the right to request the reasons where their applications for credit are denied. As far as I know, the NCR hasn't received complaints of unfair discrimination from consumers, and in any case, consumers would be entitled to reasons that where they were not offered credit. So we on our side, we haven't received complaints of consumers being unfairly discriminated against, for example, on the basis of race. And if those complaints are lodged with us, they will be properly investigated, but we haven't received them as we speak. Chairperson, can I see if I'm leaving out anything else?
Okay, CEO.
Yeah, regarding the question of Chairperson, can I continue?
Yeah.
Regarding the question regarding price manipulation during COVID-19, this does not fall within our mandate. The fees and interest rates for credit are regulated, so I don't think it's possible to manipulate them because we have caps on the fees, interest, and credit life insurance premiums. So if it's with regards to prices for goods and services, that does not fall within our mandate. We would be in a position to provide our statistics on the enforcement of the NCR, just to show what the number of investigations that we have conducted and how many of those where enforcement action has been taken, so we can provide that information in writing to the committee. And then with regards to the percentages of enforcement actions that are taken during a particular financial year, for example, where we say that the target is to take enforcement action in 80% of the investigations for that particular financial year, it doesn't mean that the balance of the 20%, no enforcement action will be taken. Enforcement action will be taken in the next financial year. It was purely to cater for a situation where investigations were conducted, and especially in the last quarter of the financial year, you are unable to move from investigation to enforcement action because the end of March is near the corner. But it doesn't mean that on the 20% of those that were found to warrant enforcement action, it is never taken in the next financial year. Yeah, thank you very much, Chairperson. I think I've covered most of the questions that I needed to address. Thank you.
Chairperson, there was also a question around why it is that we are looking at 40% spent on women-owned companies only, and we took that from the SONA that was presented by the President. And the training sessions that we intend to conduct will not just be limited to law firms, but also, you know, in general, I mean, for instance, procure other services other than, you know, legal services. So that will be extended to other companies that, you know, bid for NCR work in whichever area. And in terms of greening the economy, NCR, you know, we do have a ICT systems, but a lot of our work is very manual, and therefore there's a lot of paper, you know, that is used. And that's why, you know, we felt it was necessary to start there and to make sure that that paper doesn't go to waste once it has been used. And that's the reason why we came up with the idea around recycling used paper. Can I ask maybe at this stage to ask the CFO or the Deputy CEO to come in, Honorable Chair, with your permission?
Yes,
I'm just looking at the other questions. Thank you.
Thank you.
Deputy CEO, are there questions that we may not have responded to that you can assist with?
Thank you, but I'm members. I think with regards to one of the questions posed by Honorable Mbuyani, he indicated that he would like to see the NCR going out more often into rural areas. Pre-COVID, the NCR had a specific program called Imbizos, which were spearheaded by the CEO, where we would visit all the rural areas, and this was in partnership with local traditional authorities and so forth. But however, since the advent of, you know, the COVID-19, we have abandoned workshops and Imbizos, and we are now more reliant on other media platforms such as radio interviews. For rural areas, actually, we're more reliant on community radio stations to can reach out to rural communities. Additionally, we have procured a mobile office, which is a van that is fully equipped with all the necessary, you know, tools that we can rely on, including loudhailers and so forth. We intend to utilize this particular mobile office to reach out to far-flung areas. As you may know, Honorable Members, the NCR does not have national footprint, and it only has one office, which is in Midrand, and therefore we need to be creative in terms of seeing how to reach out to the rest of the country. That was that on that particular question. And the other general comment that I wanted to put on the table, Honorable Chairperson, is that we should note the fact that NCR is a very small organization, but however, it's settled with a big mandate, which is regulating the entire credit landscape in the whole of country. We're regulating over 7,000 credit funds. We are limited. Budget cuts for the next 3 years, we're going to experience that going forward. And we were also reliant on generating income from registration fees. And we have seen the advent of the COVID-19 affecting negatively most of our registrants, you know, resulting in closures. And on the bigger ones, such as banks, they have become innovative and introduced ICT tools, which in turn have meant closure of branches. Now you can apply for a loan on an app on your mobile telephone. Now you can make an application for a loan at an ATM and so forth. And then the closure of branches means that there are less branch fees that we can, you know, we can get from this registrant. And from a capacity point of view, I think we can confirm, I mean, the organization has less than 200 employees in total. And when you look at our investigation department and compile, it has less than 20 inspectors. And the complexities of cases that we're dealing with indeed, you know, take time. Think about a reckless lending matter. It's so complicated and so forth. And coupled with the fact that once you decide to take enforcement action, be it a referral to the tribunal or issuance of a compliance notice, because the industry that we're regulating is highly, you know, resourced financially, they always take us on. They challenge the compliance notices, they contest the referral to the tribunal, and they get the best of advocates in, you know, in practice. and drag on the cases and so forth. So we are very, very challenged, and I was just thinking that we need to therefore bear in mind that in trying to do the mandate assigned to us, we try our best under the circumstances. To add to what my colleague said regarding some of the proactive actions that we undertook during the advent of the COVID-19, one of the things that we did was we issued a circular in terms of Regulation 3, in terms of which we extended the prescribed business days in which registrants could do business. For example, periods relating to, you know, the cancelling processes, because we are mindful of the fact that the courts were not operating and so forth. You know, a proposal and the application in general has to take a maximum of 6 days and so forth. And since this was interrupted, we decided that you know, this should be extended to allow to continue to protect consumers by not terminating those that is all from myself. Thanks, Chairperson.
I believe, sorry Chairperson, sorry to interrupt you. I just wanted to say I take it we have responded to the questions that were asked. I don't know if there's any other question that we left out. Thank you, Chairperson.
Well, can we then, we will just make sure that at least there's a follow-up, if ever there's any, to actually pick up on the issues. Because we do actually have the research team as well, and that would have important issues that they raise, we may have to share with you. But I think let's check with the honorable members, because for the purpose of the meeting, we can actually find that there might be additional points, honorable members.
Chair, we have Mr. McPherson's hand up, Chair.
Okay, honorable McPherson.
That's the only hand at the moment, Chair.
Thank you very much. So I find the response is a bit strange insofar as that basically, just summarizing, you know, what the NCR have said is that, you know, well, on the emergency or on the, at least the bank, on the COVID-19 loan scheme, the 200 billion rand, that, you know, it's not really for them to get involved, you know, in essentially, you know, how to tell banks or, you know, how to lend. But, you know, it's the NCR that sets the affordability assessment. So if the affordability assessment is as rigid as it is, then that's what banks use as a minimum to measure their risks. So, you know, of course the NCR had every role to play in the loan scheme, and they chose not to. That's just the bottom line. And I think that that's a real, you know, abrogation of their responsibilities, you know, to be proactively involved. I mean, the only proactive thing that's been cited is that they sent one circular in an entire 12 months. I mean, where is the proactive work of the NCR? I mean, anybody who understands business, who understands consumers, knows that, you know, credit is a lifeline to many businesses and to consumers. Without that lifeline, people cannot function. So if the NCR's belief is that they're a, you know, sort of a spectator in all of this, you know, I really think that you guys have got it wrong. And I think that you should have intervened. And I think that you should have been having discussions with Treasury. And you should have been having discussions with the banks. And clearly you haven't done that. And you should have been asking, well, what is your role in trying to manage affordability assessments for banks to measure using the loan scheme? You didn't do that, and I think that that's a failure on your behalf. Secondly, I want to disagree with you that there was no need to invoke Section 11 because banks could use, could grant credit under emergency loans. What Section 11 allows is for a very specific type of loans, specifically, you know, smaller kinds of credit lines for consumers to be used. And we had very clearly stated that in our submission. And I think, this is my view, is that if you had done that, and you had given thanks, and there was a very real appetite and a very, very real desire on their behalf, on their side, to invoke Section 11, that I think that a lot of people would have been able to mitigate the financial distress that they went through. But again, you just simply leave it to credit providers to make those decisions instead of actually giving them frameworks and guidelines to do so, instead of using that public interest loans to say, we're going to give you the opportunity to scale down those affordability assessments, and these are the minimums that we think that you can use. These are the reduction in fees in which you can do, and we had specifically said there that we think that a reduction of 1% applicable on all fees and rates versus the 2015 published maximum rates would be applied. Then they could use that. But again, you chose to be spectators. And I really think that for far too long, the NCR, you know, is a compliance desk instead of a proactive credit market sort of setting the agenda for lenders to operate in. And I think it's an abrogation of the responsibility. So with respect, CEO, I think that there was a big difference between the application of emergency loan and the activation of Section 11. Because if Section 11, you know, if you can just simply get around Section 11 with emergency loans, why have it in the first place? So there is a very real difference. Then I'd like to get an update, CEO, that we now headed towards 2 years. The 19th of August, 2019, is when the debt relief bill, as it's colloquially referred to, was signed into law by the president, formerly known as the Credit Amendment Bill. What? How far are you in your matrix in seeing that bill realized in terms of what the NCR's responsibilities are from that bill? If you could just give us a progress update, how far you are, because that's 2 years now since the bill's been signed. Thanks.
Can I check if there were any further hands of members of the committee? Okay. Let me just say then, it will be important just to take CEO the last comments, and obviously there are areas that we may need to actually follow through, because they are actually encouragement with what Honorable McPherson is raising of the NCR to be more involved and engaging as a request for a participative involvement on the developments we're actually having. And in terms of the question specifically, I think it's area where we need to see programmatically what is it that we plan to do and what are the engagements to actually reach out on the basis of what we have as amendment or improvement in terms of legislation, and be able to actually get to the point of extension of engagement with the stakeholders. I think those are main issues that are coming through clearly. Let me actually then ask that the team with the CEO round up on issues. CEO, can I ask you and your team then to respond to the questions? And if ever there are other issues we need to follow through, I'm sure we'll be able to do that. But I think the encouragement is very clear to say, please get more involved, engage, and in terms of more contribution from the legislation you have got, do more and participate and actually make sure that you are facilitating, coordinating, and participating as part of the program. CEO, I'll go back to you, and then I'll ask the DDG to comment after the CEO and the team's comment on the last comment of McPherson. or what might be other comments you'd like to pick up, Honorable CEO?
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, and thank you for those questions. I just wanted to indicate to Honorable McPherson that we did have discussions with the Reserve Bank and the National Treasury around Section 11 versus emergency loans, and we provided, you know, our advice as I, you know, alluded to earlier on, in terms of, you know, preference, you know, being given to an already existing provision in the Act that can be utilized, which is around emergency loans. And the question around the National Credit Amendment Bill on National Credit Act, National Credit Act Amendment, which relates to debt intervention. We have submitted an implementation plan to the DTIC, and Honorable Chair, if you don't mind, we would request that perhaps the DDG fill the committee in on, you know, where the process is. And after having said that, I also just want to indicate that it is really important for us as the NCR to continue collaborating, you know, with other industry players and stakeholders in the credit industry, because that is the only way that we'll be able to make a real impact, you know, on the ground, to be able to continue to protect consumers, but also to ensure that the credit industry, you know, operates sustainably. For instance, we are in the process of establishing the National Register of Credit Agreements, and we are working together with the Reserve Bank, the financial services, financial sector, FSCA, and FIC, which is the Financial Intelligence Center, in making sure that, you know, this register, once established, hopefully, you know, will be able to regulate this industry more effectively. So we are in that process. We are collaborating with other regulators in a number of areas, and we really believe that in working in partnership with not just regulators but other stakeholders in the credit industry, this will go a long way in ensuring that, you know, we are able to deliver on our mandate. At this point, Honorable Chairperson, can I ask other members, my team, perhaps any one of them, to make a comment if they wish? Thank you.
Okay, let's get to the next person to comment, the CEO. And then we'll actually ask the DDG.
The person is Mr. Mashapa.
Okay.
Thank you very much. We agree with Mr. McPherson that the NCR should participate and engage more, which is what we have been doing. We have been talking to banks since April last year on the measures that they are implementing to assist consumers in general during the COVID-19 pandemic. But I just want to point out to Mr. McPherson that the affordability assessment regulations do not apply to developmental credit. And I think you can look at them. They don't apply to developmental credit. When we said that we cannot in a way dictate to banks how they should lend, what we meant was, remember, on the back of the affordability assessment regulations, you also have provisions in the Act, for example, between Section 78 to 85, which regulate reckless lending, and, for example, requires credit providers to verify the incomes, the debt repayment history, and the living expenses of consumers. So practically, it would have been impossible to use a regulation to remove those requirements, because what you needed then was an amendment of the primary legislation. You need to amend the Act, because the regulation talks to what is in the Act. The last question that I wanted to respond to was the withdrawal of consumers from debt review. in the past, what used to happen was consumers whose financial positions improved after they have applied for debt review and the tribunal or the court has issued a debt review order, was for the consumers to approach the High Court to be declared not to be over indebted anymore. But last week, in 2019, there was a decision of the full bench of the High Court in the Gauteng Division of the High Court, where the court said actually the High Court doesn't have the power to declare that a consumer is not over indebted and can exit debt review. The only way the consumer can exit debt review in terms of the Act is for the consumer to be issued with a clearance certificate. And that's the current position. So the current position is the consumer must be issued with a clearance certificate by the debt counselor to exit debt review. And that means that the consumer would need to have satisfied all the debt obligations that are in the debt rearrangement order. Thank you, Chairperson.
Okay. Okay. Are there any further comments from your team, CEO? If you actually concluded, I'll ask the DDG for comments and then try and actually round up in terms of our agenda. CEO?
I see the DDG is already on. I don't see any anyone from my team, Chairperson. Thank you.
Yeah. So I think, DDG, before we actually get to you, I thought what will be quite important on all issues raised would actually make sure that through a secretariat, those issues are actually captured so that at least the entity we're actually having oversight on, those issues are being actually programmatized to a point that we can be able to actually have those areas where we see there might be opportunity of improvement to ensure stability and growth are actually considered as part of the program or improvement or addition to the program. Let's get DDG.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you to the CEO and her team on the responses to the questions that were raised by the honorable members. And thank you to the honorable members for the questions that they have raised and the advice and guidance related to being proactive and ensuring that the National Credit Regulator is seen out there representing communities and ensuring that issues of credit and literacy and so on are adhered to, and that they look at the mandate beyond the compliance, but to ensure that there's also empowerment in the credit industry and credit markets. And we have noted all the comments, Chair, and to thank the honorable members. In terms of the National Credit Amendment Act that was passed into law in 2019, the department has been engaging and consulting with some key role players in the credit industry and the regulators. The reason being that there has been an effort to ensure that we have a blended approach to implementation and that it is cost effective. So by cost effective, it becomes a critical point now, especially with the current situation that we have encountered with the COVID-19 and the constraints to the fiscals. So, Chair, as a way forward for this current financial year, the department will be continuing with the engagement with more role players in the market, in the credit industry, with the regulators, to ensure that we finalize or work around an implementation plan around the implementation of this legislation. And just to bring a bit of a background, there was a point where we had the regulatory impact assessment that was conducted on the Act at the time it was a bill, and it highlighted concerns, for instance, issues around the cost to the fiscals, the informal credit markets that might be triggered by the legislation.
So there has been a cautionary approach taken by the department to ensure that we consult extensively and to ensure that the implementation is effective and sustainable. So that is where we are. And Chair, we are prepared as a department to write a response in writing in more detail, just to give more updates in terms of the specific activities that have been we've been engaged in terms of the implementation of the Act. So for now, that is the feedback that we can provide. Thank you very much.
Can I ask that, we conclude as the committee?
Chair?
Yes, Secretariat?
We have Mr. McPherson who raised his hand, Chair.
Honourable McPherson?
Thanks, I won't be long. So just on the back of what the DDG said, so I just want to if she can maybe just give me an idea. 2 years later, when do we expect the implementation of the amendment bill? Another year, 2 years, sort of what's the timeline? Thanks.
Can I actually suggest, I think from what you're suggesting, Honourable McPherson, it's actually the point which one was actually suggesting, which also the DDG confirmed that there should be a response in writing with the level of detail which will actually help us respond, get the understanding of the question you're asking also, Honourable McPherson. So I think one was actually thinking through Secretariat and the Department, let's actually then make sure that at least we get a follow-up on these particular issues that we raise, which will also include the sense of the implementation of some of the legislation that actually have impact on the space which relates to the entity that we actually had an input from today. So I think that will actually be helpful. Thanks very much, Honourable McPherson. DDG, in the conclusion, I think we would actually follow through with the Secretariat just to make sure that the relevant issues that the committee has raised do get some kind of feedback, in a sense that we are able to look at the plans in a way that we should be able to make progress on those specific areas identified. So I would ask that we conclude at that point. Secretariat, can I just check if ever there's any other issues outstanding? But on this one, we will follow up with the Secretariat and the DDG to be able to pick up on those issues. Secretariat, I thought let's actually check before we conclude if ever there are any specific issues you'd like to raise on this particular matter.
Chair, we take note of your request and we will highlight those things and forward it to the DTIC, Chair. With regard to any other matter from our side, not for today, Chair, just in terms of next week's program that we will be meeting on the 1st and 2nd of June, so that we will communicate the agendas for those meetings in due course, Chair.
Okay. Honourable members, I think that's the conclusion of our meeting today. Our next meeting will be on the 1st and the 2nd of June. And we actually do have part of the program which we have adopted as a committee on the way forward. Thank you very much. I think we can actually conclude our meeting in terms of our program today. Thanking DDG and the CEO, and obviously I think we will be able to get that follow-up part to be able to actually make sure that at least there's continuous engagement on those kind of issues. Can I then conclude the meeting? And
Chair? Apologies, Mr. Burns. Namashe raised his hand, Chair.
Oh, okay. Honourable Namashe?
Not
Namaste. Honorable Namaste. Namaste. I can't hear a word. Honorable Namaste.
Meeting again.
Yeah, no, no. Okay. Yeah, no, no.
I'll follow the message.
Honorable Namaste, can you hear me? Yeah, but I can't hear you. Secretary, let's actually agree that then we will ask that we get the chat will be closed when we actually move out now. But I think we would actually ask Honorable Namaste in writing on the issue that he wanted to raise. We can't hear him at all.
We will follow up.
Yeah. Thank you very much. So let's actually conclude our meeting. Our portfolio committee meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much, honorable members.
Thank you, Jim.
Thank you, Jim.
Thank you.